It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Fine, except they dump them out at 6 o'clock in the morning, and these folks got nowhere to go for the whole day. Where are they going to be not only tonight, but tomorrow in the snow with nowhere to go? So it's an outrage. I've got names of five people, four of whom have died because of exposure. The fifth is questionable.
Richmond City Council member Marty Jewell talks about the status of homelessness assistance in the Richmond area and whether current efforts are solving the problem or just making it less visible. And you'll learn when you can pay your rent late and stay and when you can't during our weekly question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 74, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. The Virginia Department of Social Services has reissued a July 2008 directive to local departments of social services offices about inadequate notices of adverse action. Virginia DSS requires that every notice of action must contain enough specific information to enable individuals to understand why the action is being taken and to decide if they agree or disagree with the action. For example, the phrase, excess resources, is not a sufficient reason for denying or terminating benefits without explaining exactly what resources were counted and how those resources exceeded the applicable resource limit. An appropriate explanation would say, excess resources, bank account more than $2,000, or vehicle more than $2,000. In addition, notices also must cite to the specific regulation or state policy that supports the action taken, including the appropriate subsection or page number on which the applicable policy can be found. In other news, America's millionaires and billionaires can die now and not pay later under a quirk in the U.S. estate tax law that Congress failed to act on in 2009. The inheritance tax, which critics deride as a death tax, officially expired on December 31 for those who passed away in 2010. But a stiff tax will come back for anyone who survives into 2011. This bizarre scenario results from a law enacted in 2001 under President George W. Bush, which gradually phased out the estate tax by increasing the exemption to $3.5 million in 2009 and eliminating the tax entirely in 2010. For budget reasons, the law had a sunset provision that meant it would expire and the tax would return in 2011 at the pre-enactment levels of 55% of any inheritance amounts above $1 million. The Wall Street Journal has reported that some wealthy Americans were kept on life support through the end of 2009, while others were considering a trip to the Netherlands in 2010 to take advantage of an assisted suicide law for terminally ill patients with the tax loophole in mind. For more information, contact United for a Fair Economy at www.faireconomy.org. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright.
Turn me around, no, turn me around. Let old
You are listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is SR-22. An SR-22 is a document or electronic certification issued by an auto insurance company that verifies to the state that you have an auto insurance policy with the state minimum liability limits. An SR-22 usually is required by the Department of Motor Vehicles for high-risk drivers. In Virginia, an SR-22 is required for drivers who have unsatisfied judgments due to an auto accident, whose driver's license was suspended due to driving while uninsured, or whose driver's license was suspended due to a conviction for a felony, for making false statement to DMV, or for a hit and run. Anyone required to have an SR-22 must have it for at least 3 years. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and SR-22 is this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for our weekly question and answer session. We're here in the studio, and we have a questioner with a question. Please give us your name and where you're from.
Effie from Sandston.
Well, thank you for being on the show. What's your question for us?
My question is, if you receive an eviction from a landlord and you pay the balance in full prior to your eviction, does the landlord have the right to still evict you if they accept your payment?
Effie, that's a great question. And we get that question probably a dozen or more times a week. Virginia law gives you three opportunities to pay your rent late and stay. The first is within any grace period of your lease, and you can do that any number of times. The second is within any 5-day pay or quit period, and again, you can do that any number of times. The third is if your landlord files an unlawful detainer or an eviction case in court, you can stay if you pay everything you owe, the rent, any late fees called for in a lease, any attorney's fees called for in a lease if there's an attorney involved, and the court costs, if you do that no later than the first court date. If you do that, then the case has to be dismissed as paid. Although I always urge people to go to court anyway and stand in front of the clerk or the judge and make sure that the case is dismissed as paid. The landlord has no choice in the matter. The judge has no choice in the matter. However, you can only do that once in any 12-month period of time. The second time within a 12-month period of time that you try to do that, the landlord can accept your money and still go to court. And even though you pay it in full, the landlord can get a judgment of possession only. Now, once a judgment of possession has been entered, whether it's the first time or the second time or the third time, that judgment of possession is good for 1 full year, and the landlord can keep that hanging over the tenant for 1 full year. And the landlord can accept the tenant's rent payment in full and still evict the tenant as long as the landlord within 5 business days, which can be as much as 7 or 8 calendar days, gives the tenant what's called a written notice accepting the money, quote, with reservation. And that means the landlord is keeping or reserving the right to take your money and go ahead and evict you anyway. And we see a lot of tenants who believe, unfortunately, quite mistakenly, that as long as they pay in full before the actual eviction by the sheriff takes place, that they get to stay. Unfortunately, that's not true in Virginia law. Unfortunately, under Virginia law, if the landlord takes those payments after the judgment and within 5 business days of each payment gives you a written notice saying, I'm reserving the right to go ahead and evict you, the landlord can go ahead and do that. The only other thing that would save a tenant in that situation would be if you paid the judgment in full and you entered a new lease. And in that situation, the new lease creates a new tenancy, which replaces the old lease and the old tenancy upon which the judgment of possession was based. But other than that, if the landlord takes your money and doesn't make any mistakes, that eviction can be hanging over your head for a whole year. Does that pretty much explain what the law is in this area?
Yes, it does.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being on the show. We're here in the studio with Marty Jewell. He is a city council person from the city of Richmond who represents the 5th District, and we're going to be talking about the impact of the economic downturn on people's daily lives and what they might be able to do about that. Welcome to the show, Councilman Jewell.
Marty, I appreciate you having me. We got the Marty and Marty show today, and I'm happy to speak with your listeners, wishing them all and you a happy new year.
Well, thank you, Marty. I really appreciate that. So we were talking about the impact of the economic downturn on people's daily lives. I'm sure you see that every day. What kind of complaints and issues are you hearing about?
The homeless situation. It's extremely cold out there. There are no day shelters. But I find out that homeless persons can go to social services downtown at 9th and Marshall Street or Southside Plaza and get out of the cold. But nobody's advertising it. So people, how do they know if you don't advertise it? They're advertising the cold weather shelter at night for people, men and women, who need shelter overnight. Fine, except they dump them out at 6 o'clock in the morning, and these folks got nowhere to go for the whole day. Where are they going to be not only tonight, but tomorrow in the snow with nowhere to go? So it's an outrage. I've got names of 5 people, 4 of whom have died because of exposure. The 5th is questionable.
And I have not seen that in the paper at all.
It's not showing up in the news. Exactly right. It's an outrage. And so I've called the chief administrative officer. He's meeting with his people as we speak. And hopefully they'll upgrade their announcement that these shelters will be open tomorrow at the downtown social service office, the main office, and Southside Plaza. Hopefully the East End office at 25th and M Street as well.
Now, these overnight shelters, I mean, do they sometimes just have to even turn away folks overnight because they're just over full, or do they take in everybody who comes in?
Well, you've got the Caritas program that distributes the lion's share of homeless people, women and children particularly, out to the various churches in the surrounding counties and in the city as well. But then there are people who don't qualify for that, men and women, or they may have to work. They have to get out on the street earlier than the bus can bring these other folks back from the suburbs. And so the overflow shelter is there at 6 Mount Zion Church on Duval that opens at 7 o'clock at night. It takes supposedly 60, 65 people. But they've had 90 and more people coming in there. These are strictly men. They've now separated the men and the women. The women are now, overflow shelter is now at Salvation Army at 2 West Gray Street.
And why are the shelters turning folks out at 6 in the morning when it may be below freezing weather?
It is an outrage. And I can think of no reason, Marty, other than those who claim to care for people who need care the most don't care. Our homeless program is being coordinated by HOMEWOOD, which is a regional coordinating body created and funded by Corporate Richmond. Corporate Richmond's goals are different from your or my goals regarding homeless people. We want to eliminate homelessness and certainly serve them until that day comes. Corporate wants to eliminate or reduce the visibility of homeless people. They don't like looking at them. That's the problem. There's a humongous prejudice against having to look at homeless people out there. And so HOMEWOOD, who should be the main advocate for these folk, are acquiescing in just being de minimis as to how much service these folk get. And there's an attitude that undergirds all of that that essentially says we can't make life too comfortable for these people or they won't move on.
Now, there's a 10-year plan to eliminate homelessness in Richmond that's been in effect now for several years. What's your opinion on that 10-year plan? Is there anything to it?
Well, again, and I don't want to be overly harsh. I've read part of the plan until I started gagging because I don't think it's that realistic, number one, and I haven't seen the foundational kinds of activities that should go on before you even think that it could be successful in 10 years.
Well, what do you think what some of those foundational elements would be?
Well, number one, you stop feuding between those in the field of advocacy for homeless. You've got those on the one side who say you can't treat them too kindly or they'll be overly nurtured and therefore they won't get off the dole, they won't try to help themselves. Then there are others on the opposite side that I'm on, very proud to say, that if you don't provide services for people who have absolutely nothing, then they will die. Simple as that. And especially in extreme weather like this, you know, you hear people on the other side say, well, why don't they get a job? Oh, heck, why don't they just have no idea that by looking at these folk, you can't tell that these people are minus one kidney. You can't tell that these people have missing vertebrae. You can't tell that these people have abscess in their teeth just by looking at them. So, yeah, they could get a job today. They won't finish today because the mouth will drive them crazy. And so all of these prejudices are swirling even among those who claim to serve the homeless. And then you got to wonder whether some of them aren't just relishing the fact that they got a job in service to the homeless. You've got any number of, most of our agencies are private. And I don't want to be overly harsh because they do good. They do good by virtue of being in existence to house homeless people. But when you get folk operating with the notion that so-and-so is the deserving poor, while someone else is not deserving for our service, then we run into these judgmental problems, these moralistic problems. We got to get our morals straight first. That's foundational. We've got to get our goals and objectives online with really helping people as opposed to this notion of punishing people into change behavior.
And let me give you an example of that. I mean, I had a fellow in my office today. I'm helping him with an unemployment compensation case. And he was working basically most of 2009 at a fast food place. He wasn't making much, a little right. more than minimum wage, but he was, you know, working 30, 35 hours a week, supporting himself. He leaves work on a Sunday evening. He steps off a curb and he refractures an ankle that he'd broken a year earlier.
Exactly.
Now, fast food, of course, you got to be on your feet. He's off, work for 4 weeks, no income at all. His job gets filled by somebody else, and he's filing for unemployment compensation. He's homeless. He's on the street. Do you think most people understand that they're, but for the grace of God, there go I, that something as simple as stepping wrong off of a curb could cause you to become homeless?
And that's a mild, that's a rather unusual occurrence. There are lesser things than that that can knock people off their stride and make them homeless. Some people just need a little help, Marty, with paying their utility bill. They got half of it. They need the other half. People don't know that if you've got a Section 8 voucher and you let that utility get cut off, the city of Richmond's inspectors can condemn that house and you're homeless. You see what I'm saying? You and your whole family are homeless simply because you couldn't make the utility bill. There are all sorts of reasons why people become homeless.
And what should people do? Where do they need to go for help?
Social services opens from 9 to 5. They're down at 9th and Marshall Street on this side, on the north side of the river. Over south side, they're at Southside Plaza. Go to the social service office, and if anyone denies you service, call me. 332-3654. Now, Legal Aid has done a tremendous job looking out for the rights of the poor. And you do a heck of a job with the unhoused, the homeless. So they ought to come here. But come here and call me and do whatever else you need to do. Call your council person. If you can't, you don't have to be in my district. It would help. But there are other council people. If you know which district you're in, you can call the city clerk's number at 646-7955 and ask for the council person's number that you live in.
And what if you don't know who your council person is?
Well, you can call the clerk and give them an address, and they might be able to help you. But certainly you can get help if you call 646-5950. That's the registrar's office, the city registrar's office, and they can tell you exactly what council person district you're in. 646-5950. The clerk's office, again, is 646-7955.
And so once you call your council person, what kind of help can a council person give to somebody who's really in hard times? You gave a couple of examples, I guess, utilities and things of that nature. What are some examples of things that council people can possibly do to help out?
Well, it's an excellent question. There are any number of things we can do. This is Thursday, Monday, I learned that this lady who has a bad heart, low blood pressure, fluid in her legs swollen as large as an elephant, can barely walk, couldn't make it to the homeless shelter Saturday and Sunday this past after the New Year's. She slept overnight two nights in a row in an elevator in a parking deck on Franklin Street. I mean blistering cold and windy those two nights. I was able to get her Tuesday into the Daily Planet, where they've got a wonderful social worker there who did as much as she could. Wasn't enough. This lady needs to be in the convalescence home. She couldn't get the lady housing. I took her down to social services. Mr. Butcher came, who is their housing specialist, been that way for years and years, and they got her in Jones & Jones, an adult home, that day, and took her out there. A social worker took her out, transported her out there. So she's now housed. Call me today to tell me thank you. Council people can help you with your utility bill. If it's off, preferably you need to call before they cut it off. You know when it's running up. You know when you're getting warning signals. Call before that. Don't despair. Call your council person. They can help you with fuel assistance program. If anybody's blocking you on that and you're eligible, we can raise holy heck about it. To make sure that social services does their job. Yes, there are people in social services, A, who make mistakes. They put bad stuff in your records that show that you're not qualified when, in fact, you are. And so there are times when we can go and get somebody high up in social services to examine this jacket to determine whether or not this information is accurate and whether this lady is being denied client-eligible services. So there are a ton of things that we can do. Don't despair. Use your council person. They asked for your vote, didn't they?
Thank you, Councilman. It's a raw slice of life and an inspiring message from Councilman Marty Jewell, representing the 5th District in the city of Richmond. Thank you so much for being on the show, Marty.
I appreciate you having me. Anytime. I got more.
This week's top three tips are about a grounds of defense. The first tip is that a grounds of defense is a written statement giving details of a defense to a lawsuit filed in general district court. It's a more complete explanation of why the person defending the lawsuit, called the defendant, doesn't owe the money or property being asked for. The second tip is that if the judge orders a defendant to file a grounds of defense, the defendant would have a later trial date and time, and also would have a date by which to file the grounds of defense.
The third tip is that if the defendant doesn't file by this date, the defendant may automatically lose. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips about a grounds of defense.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. If you buy a used car, the chances are overwhelming that the dealer is breaking at least one, if not several, laws. Join us next week when private attorney Tom Domonoski explains how to spot the lawbreakers and what to do about them in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on November 26, 2008. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.